Hello and welcome to The Short Squeeze, a podcast about what's happening in financial markets in the coming week. I'm Lucy Battersby, editor of Markets Live, a daily live blog on the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age websites. This week, we're quickly discussing the economic news and data coming our way, then taking a closer look at the increasing trade and political tensions between Australia and China. We'll discuss a growing expectation that protecting the economy is going to be more important than protecting lives if there's a second wave of the coronavirus. And we'll discuss if there really is a good reason for the market sell-off. Today I'm joined by IG Markets analyst Kyle Rodder. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, Lucy.
So if we start off with a quick view of the economic data that's coming our way this week, I have noticed a slight change in the sentiment around data. Everyone's hoping that we're going to see positive surprises, that we're now on that right-hand side of the V-shaped recovery that everyone's counting on us being in. And there is probably going to be a fair bit of disappointment if we don't get the data coming out as expected. For example, on Monday, there was some minor data out of China that missed expectations and that really weighed on market sentiment during the Australian and Asian sessions. Later in the week, we've got US retail sales and industrial production, and they're expected to be positive after some sharp falls earlier in the year. What's your feeling on how markets are going to respond if they don't get the results they're after?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point that you make, because I think the worst of the crisis is probably behind us now, in the sense that the worst of the lockdowns have been pretty much experienced, that economies are starting to reopen, and as a result, you know, things can only really get better from here in principle. So the first sort of lot of data that you tend to get tends to be really, really bad, or has been really, really bad, just to reflect the fact that economies were put into this sort of state of hibernation, you know, out of necessity a couple of months ago. But what happens with the data there is that you tend to get these baseline effects, that because a lot of these prints are quarter over quarter, even quicker than that, month over month, that the first prints are really quite good, surprised quite considerably to the upside because the baseline was so low. But as months start to go on, you get to sort of see really the kind of momentum that's building in the data out of this particular recovery, because obviously the worst is behind it, the baseline effects aren't so profound. And if the data starts to sort of show that things aren't picking up quite as much, that potentially the recovery isn't quite as vigorous and V-shaped as one might have hoped for, at least forecasted a couple of months ago. So I think this is why this data now is really, really interesting, is that markets have certainly priced in that, you know, potentially we are in for an aggressive recovery. And on top of that, now the bar is set very, very high, that, you know, there needs to be continued solid data, outperformance in the data, to sort of justify the positive price action. And because the bar is set a little bit higher, it's a little bit more difficult. So I think we're starting to see that kind of effect come through now, where clearly things have reopened, things are going to rebound, but now we're talking about, I suppose, really the shape of the recovery. And there's no definitive signs of what shape that's going to take at this stage, at least.
We've always been discussing letters and Nike swoosh signs and all sorts of things. Although I think they call it the hockey stick, maybe not the Nike swoosh.
Yeah, that was a Nike-driven campaign.
On the Australian market, we've got the unemployment data coming out on Thursday. I think consensus is for around 6.7% and a slight increase in the participation rate. I just wanted to point out that the ABS household survey, that's one of those rapid statistics that they've been producing to help measure the economy. The latest one from late May, that last week of May, it actually had the lowest rate of people with a job out of any of the surveys that they've done since early March. It was at 63%, which was slightly lower than the earlier one, but it was up at 66% when it started in March, and now it's been declining. But the number of people working paid hours increased slightly. So I'm not sure that unemployment's going to work out the way that people were expecting. And Treasury has also recently lowered its forecast. They're no longer expecting a peak of 10%, which is a relief.
Yeah, well, I suppose we're running ahead of schedule a little bit. But, you know, go back to the jobs report a couple of weeks ago in the United States. This is the difficulty when you're dealing with, you know, quote-unquote unprecedented events, is that, you know, if you look at a lot of the modelling that any sort of economist or financial market participant will do, it's using past experience and past data to try and derive patterns that could tell you something about the future, and, you know, you're inferring from past experience. inherently, when things are sort of unprecedented, it makes it very difficult to try and model and predict what can happen in the world. And you sort of see these big, you know, misses in the US employment data and the Canadian employment data and all these other figures. So I think that'll be the really interesting thing coming up for this week's Aussie employment data, because we're only looking like we're going to shed about 75,000 jobs only, again, quote unquote. But there's a huge margin of error there. So it'll be fascinating to see whether we, you know, in the ABS figures, see, you know, these huge hit or miss like with the numbers that have popped up in other parts of the world.
Okay, thanks, Kyle. Now, we wanted to talk a little bit about this increasing tit-for-tat between Australia and China, because it is starting to affect a lot of the products that Australia exports to China, which is our biggest trading partner. The Australian economy is still very, very reliant on the China continuing to buy so many of our different products. A few weeks ago, it was barley and beef and then coal. Kyle, you were suggesting iron ore might possibly be at risk, which would be a much bigger problem than barley.
Yeah. Well, it was derived from a Global Times article that came out at the start of the week, more or less, that, and, you know, obviously, for those who aren't aware of the Global Times, it's considered a bit of a mouthpiece for the Chinese government, that effectively that Australia shouldn't count on iron ore not being potentially targeted by trade barriers or tariffs or anything like that if diplomatic tensions between Australia and China continue to ratchet up. So we saw the iron ore price sell off on the back of that yesterday, and I think it came as somewhat of a shock to the market. You know, it's a very kind of, I suppose, hawkish view from an editorial point of view, the Global Times. But I think there's been this rationale that at least, you know, China is so dependent on our iron ore because we're, you know, effectively the biggest exporter of it. We're closer than Brazil is to China. And obviously Brazil have all these other issues at the moment when it comes to their mining industry, that iron ore would be a little bit untouched and that, you know, at least we could rely on that sort of staple of our economy and of our, you know, of our stock market too, not coming under, I suppose, direct attack in any way from the Chinese. But that sort of notion's been thrown into doubt this week. Again, it could all be bluster and a little bit of theatre there from the Global Times, and they are known to provide that kind of opinion in the Chinese press. But nevertheless, it goes to show that even to a certain point for the Chinese, potentially, that iron ore could be something that they'd sacrifice our exports of it if it did mean that they could score some sort of strategic or political or diplomatic win out of it. So a very interesting one, considering iron ore has been such a, obviously, a bullish market in the last couple of weeks.
One of our other major exports to China is education, and the Chinese ministry last week warned students that there's a significant increase in racist attacks on Chinese and Asian people here, and then the Global Times again was warning students not to study in Australia. So there is that little bit of chipping away. We should point out that Australia, meanwhile, has decided that they're going to review every single foreign investment, regardless of how small it is in Australia.
Right.
Yes. And, of course, a lot of those investments come from China. So there used to be a threshold and now it's every single thing that comes in. And a lot of this appears to be in retaliation for Australia supporting that global investigation into the COVID-19 outbreak and how it was handled.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how people deal with this and if we're able to settle it down and make sure that China doesn't really impose tariffs on some of those bigger export products.
Yeah, absolutely. And it all comes back to a very hawkish China on the global stage at the moment anyway. So we're just, it would seem, one small piece of the puzzle for China, the Chinese from a strategic point of view. So let's just hope that their ambitions are bound by economic rationality.
Okay, thanks, Kyle.
IG is a world-leading online trading provider, giving traders access to over 16,000 global financial markets on our award-winning platforms. With over 45 years of experience, you can trade with confidence when with IG. Visit ig.com.au for more information. All trading involves risks. Issued by IG Markets Limited, AFSL 220440.
Welcome back. In the second half of our podcast, we like to talk about a few of the issues that are popping up on our radar. Kyle, this week I've noticed an increasing number of economists talking about what might happen in a second wave and saying that it's unlikely that there will be another round of lockdowns due to the economic damage that's happened so far from the lockdowns. Their conviction seems to be from seeing a lot of the US state governors easing restrictions, even though their coronavirus cases are just increasing rapidly. For example, Alabama, one of the states that was most stridently against the lockdowns, they've had a massive spike in cases. They had 1,000 new cases over the weekend, and their hospitals are starting to be completely overwhelmed. But there's absolutely no talk of bringing restrictions back in. Initially, a lot of people were pointing to Sweden, and admittedly, Sweden's gross domestic product, their GDP, that didn't take a big hit during the first quarter of this year like so many other economies did. I think they actually grew 0.5% year on year compared to, you know, declines of 5% in the US and 2% in Germany. But Sweden's now got one of the highest death rates of nearly 10% from the virus. So it's funny that we've had this. Initially, when the virus came out, there was a lot of people saying, oh, you can't choose the economy over lives. And now that our healthcare systems have had a chance to repair, it looks like the economy might win the second time around.
Yeah, it does sort of seem to be like that. And I guess in, you know, sort of classical finance terms, you call it a sunk cost, that if you do go through this kind of painful shutdown to try and curb the virus and it effectively comes back either bigger and stronger, that whatever you've done in the past, you just have to put aside and then make a judgment on the future as to what's going to be most socially beneficial. I suppose the other concern is, especially in Western democracies, is that people have become obviously quite fed up and somewhat fatigued with the lockdowns, and that you're obviously dealing with the very pragmatic question of, well, if we do lockdowns, are people going to obey, and are they going to continue to sit idly at home while potentially they're out of a job or they're feeling isolated or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So the conversation does seem to be shifting now to one where if there is a second wave in the market, I do think the markets are discounting this, because they're certainly not discounting a second lockdown. That if there is something of a second wave, that policymakers will approach it from a very different perspective, and that you know, perhaps it'll be something of a world where we just get used to the coronavirus with some sort of restrictions on the edges, but you know, a world where obviously the economy and other social concerns are prioritised over the health crisis.
Mm. And Carl, what's happening? What are you picking up on your radar this week?
Yeah, I just wanted to make it a bit of a general, perhaps philosophical point this week, where we were talking a lot about, you know, what caused that sell-off, that 5% move in the stock market last week, especially on Wall Street. 5% sell-off in, you know, a day on Wall Street. I think we had a 3 or 4% decline in the ASX 200 over a couple of days. But for me, it's perhaps going back to something you might pick up, you know, reading Nicholas Taleb, a great book that he wrote, was called Fooled by Randomness. And it's the whole sort of desire for market participants in particular to explain everything and every big move as it happens with a clear overarching narrative that can at least make sense of what's going on in the world. And I think sometimes that's the case. Obviously, if there's clearly a tweet that's come out or a Federal Reserve meeting that's happened and prices move off the back of that, then it becomes very clear that there's a causality to a move in the market. But for me, sometimes things happen just because that markets are very complex places and that we can't always explain them. And just like in the last few weeks that the markets rallied without a particularly good reason, valuations became stretched, there wasn't that much good news, we just had the sort of Fed narrative there feeding through, that sometimes things just get overbought and things get a little bit too bullish in the market, and there needs to be somewhat of a correction to take account of that. So it'll be interesting to see that we have what we have coming up this week and how market prices evolve. But it certainly seems to me that over the last sort of 3 or 4 days, the sell-off is better described as just a market that needs a bit of a correction and pull back, because that's how markets work, rather than potentially any sort of clear story to explain it. So that's my perhaps editorial for the week, that sometimes these things happen just because, not because of any particular event.
Okay, thanks very much. This has been The Short Squeeze, a podcast produced by The Age and Sydney Morning Herald in conjunction with IG Markets. You can follow daily stock market news on our live blog. And feel free to subscribe to this podcast via your podcast platform. You can catch us again next week.